The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Just a few moments ago, the Senate voted cloture, which is a nice formality, meaning that the Republicans' attempt to filibuster President Barack Obama's stimulus package has failed, at least for now. They got the 61 votes they needed, along with the 58 Democrats voting for it, and 3 Republicans coming on board. That would be a total of 3, given that 0 Republicans supported it in the House. With unemployment at record high levels, higher than it's been in some 25 years, going up from 7.2% in December to 7.6% in January. When you include Americans that are underemployed, people who want a full-time job and can't find one, the rate has gone up to almost 14%, 13.9%. In other words, 1 in 7 Americans wants a job and can't get one. The worst economy since 1982, and it's getting worse as we speak. Our President Barack Obama says we're in an emergency. We need a stimulus package. The Republican response? No. No, no, no. They've become the party of no. With their new leader, who I think is Rush Limbaugh, they say it's Michael Steele, but it really looks to me more to be like Rush Limbaugh, they are hoping Obama fails and takes the country down with him. Why are they deciding to be the great obstructionist? Well, to help try to answer some of those questions, I've invited someone from the party of no, from the Republican Party, a frequent guest on the show. His name is Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist, the president of Intelligence Strategies. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back.
So is this the Republican strategy, obstruct Obama as much as possible? I mean, he went, he talked with them, he brought them in, he invited them to help write the legislation, and all they voted on was a $3 trillion substitute, which got 36 out of 41 Republican senators, to get $3 trillion in tax cuts. Is that all the Republican Party has to offer, tax cuts?
Mark, you know, tax cuts are what's going to get us out of this economic mess that we're in. There are 3 things that the Obama administration, through their economic guru Larry Summers, said we needed in this stimulus package. It needed to be targeted, it needed to be timely, and it needed to be temporary. This stimulus package, if you call it that, has none of those 3 characteristics. There's nothing temporary about it, there's nothing timely about it, and there's nothing targeted about it. It's every Democratic wish list thing pent up for the last 40 years. Republicans will support a stimulus package designed to get money in the hands of consumers that they can then go out and spend and revitalize the economy and revitalize business. We are not, as a party, going to support efforts to accomplish every liberal Democratic wish list for the last 40 years.
Well, Mike, it's interesting because your new leader, Michael Steele, and we'll talk about him in just a few minutes, but he was arguing that it's too temporary, that in fact government jobs were temporary and that's why we shouldn't have government jobs. Let me play for you what he had to say on ABC.
But outside of Washington, some strong Republican voices have said the stimulus package is needed now. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor Charlie Crist of Florida, he supports the package.
This program will help us with education, with health care, Medicaid specifically, infrastructure. These are the kinds of things that produce jobs. It could mean $13 billion to the Sunshine State. It comes at a time when we need it. People need jobs. It's about jobs, jobs, jobs.
He suggests that you and Republican Party leaders here in Washington are on the wrong side of the biggest issue, jobs.
Well, now, you know, with all due respect to the governor, I understand where he's coming from. Having been a state official, I know what it means to get those dollars when you're in tight times. But you've got to look at the entire package. You've got to look at what's going to create sustainable jobs. What this administration is talking about is making work. It is creating
that's
work.
That's a job.
No, it's not a job. A job is something that a business owner creates. It's going to be long-term. What he's creating
so a job
is
a, doesn't count if it's a government job?
Let me finish. That is a contract. It ends at a certain point, George. You know that. These road projects that we're talking about have an end point. As a small business owner, I'm looking to grow my business, expand my business. I want to reach further. I want to be international. I want to be national. It's a whole different perspective on how you create a job versus how you create work. And either way, the bottom line is...
I guess I don't really understand
the
distinction.
Well, the distinction is this. If you got a government contract that is a fixed period of time, it goes away. The work may go away. There's no guarantee that there's going to be more work when you're done that job.
We've seen millions and millions of jobs going away in the private sector just in the last year.
They come back, though, George. That's the point. When they've gone away before, and they come back.
I got to tell you, Mike, he doesn't seem very convincing to me. For one thing, it's interesting, he seems to be arguing against you. You said it wasn't temporary. Michael Steele says they're too temporary. Who's right?
Actually, Chairman Steele and I are on the exact same page on this. What he's arguing, what I agree with 100%, is that the government make work projects are temporary jobs. They don't create a permanent job. You know, you're building a highway, you build it at the end of the year, that person's unemployed again, and the only way that you're going to keep that job going is by the government having an ad infinitum investment in this kind of stuff, just open-ended spending by the government, and that's what the Republican Party is arguing against. Chairman Steele, I think, very effectively made the case that when you have a job in the private sector, when you finish building a road, you go out and bid on a contract to build another road, or when you finish building a house, you go out and you bid on a contract, or you speculate and you build another house. The government doesn't work that way, and that's what Chairman Steele was criticizing.
And Stephanopoulos was pointing out, in the private sector, we've lost 1.8 million jobs just in the last 3 months.
And
the private sector isn't doing that.
There is a business cycle. There's no doubt.
That's right.
There is no doubt that it goes up and down.
And that is why what you said at the beginning, before you heard Chairman Steele, is actually right. We do need temporary jobs. And the reason you need them is, first of all, when they finish building that highway, guess what? We have a really nice highway. You drive around Washington, D.C., you see beautiful bridges built in the 1930s under Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal that stand the test of time, frankly, are a lot more sturdy than some of the bridges they built in the 60s. You have this infrastructure. You have highways that are falling apart in Minnesota. You have levees that crashed in New Orleans. We need infrastructure. And I'll tell you what these temporary jobs do. They create what economists call a multiplier effect. It's not like you give a guy $1 million on a job project for 100 workers, and the 100 workers take the million and you're done. They go out, they spend, and they spend a lot of that money, and then those people who get it in the restaurants or wherever they put the money, amusement parks or movie theaters, those people then go out and they spend, and it multiplies. And there can be some disagreement over what the multiplier effect is, but most think it's at least 4 or 5. For every million you spend, another 5 million comes around. So we need temporary in order precisely to go against the business cycle until the economy can rev up on its own.
Mark, that's called socialism.
And Keynes economics.
And Keynes was totally and thoroughly discredited years and years ago.
It worked for Franklin Roosevelt. It got us out of the Great Depression. This is the greatest depression since the Great Depression.
We all know that it did not work for Franklin Roosevelt.
Of course it did.
His own secretary, Secretary Morgenthau, said that after 7 years of spending as much as we possibly could, we haven't solved the problem. That was Franklin Roosevelt's own Secretary of the Treasury. Now, Japan tried it. All through the 90s, Japan was lackluster. They tried 6 different stimulus bills of spending. It didn't work in Japan. What we're talking about here, the permanent kind of jobs, if the government builds a highway, yeah, you've got this highway, okay, I'm not going to begrudge you, you got that highway, and I'm glad to see we're building highways. Better we build highways than have buses or trains or anything like that. Let's build some highways so people can go where they want to go. I like that part.
Buses and trains are good, too.
But what happens is when the highway is finished being built and this cement pourer or the mixer or the laborer, what does he do next? You haven't gotten the business community out there expanding and investing and creating jobs themselves. The government is creating these. So the only thing you can do at the end of that project is to have another government make work project. In fact, the CBO, you're nice people, the Congressional Budget Office.
All nice people. They are nonpartisan.
The nonpartisan ones who are controlled by the Democratic Congress and have been for the last 2 years.
They said last Wednesday
that this program is going to take so much money and borrow so much money out of the private sector that 10 years from now, gross domestic product will be lower than it would otherwise be if we did absolutely nothing, because we'll still be squeezing access to borrowed capital out of the private markets as the government sucks it all up and still continues to try and pay it. That was the CBO nonpartisan estimate last Wednesday.
Well, first of all, I need to correct a little bit of history here, because people should understand the New Deal really did work. In fact, the only time there was any slowdown is when they stopped the spending. They stopped priming the pump in 1937, and some of the Depression-era problems returned. They have returned to priming the pump in 38, and we were roared out of that.
So you're agreeing that there should be nothing temporary about it, that the government spending should just go forever.
No, what I'm saying is that the Great Depression was the greatest economic crisis America faced and required many, many years of spending. But the purpose of government spending is to prime the pump. Right now, we have, according to the same CBO, we have $3 trillion in our economy that's not being used. Why? Because the private sector isn't up to the job. Why not? Because your friends on Wall Street, who weren't regulated because your friends in Congress didn't want to regulate them, now have such a big credit crunch because they threw all that money away on credit derivative swaps and so forth. There is no credit given to the economy. A private company that wants to build can't, because they can't get any credit. What the government does by priming the pump is it gets people back to work. A government job is a real job. Sorry, Michael Steele, it is a real job. And once people are working and that multiplier effect continues, that gets us out of the business cycle. This is basic economics, which apparently you Republicans just haven't read.
It's Keynesian economics, and Keynes was discredited years ago.
Who discredited Keynes? What are you talking about?
Friedman discredited Keynes. Keynes is so irrelevant to the way the economy works.
No.
It doesn't work that way, Mark.
Friedman emphasized monetary policy.
You need to have private investment. Government investment gets you nowhere.
We don't have private investment. Why not? Because we have a credit crunch. Because your friends on Wall Street messed everything up.
We will have private investment and private consumer spending if we cut taxes enough. If we took 2 years of capital gains and just said zero capital gains for the next 2 years, do you know how much private investment there would be in the
country? Very little.
It would be astronomical.
And
get us out of this recession about as fast as anything we could do.
Not at all, because the rich people, the problem is not that rich people have too much money. I know that you think the rich people need more money.
No.
I don't think they need more money.
They need incentive to invest it.
We've got $3 trillion in excess capacity. It's not going because people are afraid. And people are afraid because banks don't know what kind of toxic stuff is on their books. That's got nothing to do. I think Barack Obama, our president, pointed out very well that when you keep trying to do the same thing, remember, George Bush did this program of all tax cuts. You keep trying the same thing again and again and it fails, you don't do the same thing over again. Let's hear what President Obama had to say about your plan, Republican plan, tax cuts.
Is don't come to the table with the same tired arguments and worn ideas that helped to create this crisis. Come on, we are not going to get relief by turning back to the very same policies that for the last 8 years doubled the national debt and threw our economy into a tailspin. We can't embrace the losing formula that says only tax cuts will work for every problem we face, that ignores critical challenges like our addiction to foreign oil, or the soaring costs of health care, or falling schools and crumbling bridges and roads and levees. I don't care whether you're driving a hybrid or an SUV. If you're headed for a cliff, you've got to change direction. That's what the American people called for in November, and that's what we intend to deliver.
I'll give you a chance to respond to the president, but first we have to take a break. If you want to call in, folks, and join this discussion, please feel free to do so. It's easy to do. You have the number right there, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back.
The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. President Barack Obama did reach out to Republicans in ways that George Bush never reached out to Democrats. He went to the House Republican caucus at least twice, I think maybe three times, something that George Bush never did in 8 years of his presidency, go to the House Democratic caucus. But it didn't win him over a single vote. In the Senate, he managed to pry away three moderate Republicans, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania and Olympia Snow and Susan Collins of Maine, but most of the Republicans seem to be going on no. They want tax cuts, only tax cuts. That's the only thing they want, and indeed they voted in the Senate. 36 Republicans voted for $3 trillion in tax cuts, three times the current surplus package, actually more than three times, almost four times, over 10 years. And President Obama says, now wait a minute, I'm willing to reach out, I'm willing to compromise with you, I'm willing to go, and we'll talk about the specific compromise that was made between the House and the Senate bill, but enough is enough. You can't go and do these same tax cuts, the same things that Bush did for 8 years, and expect it's going to change. The American people voted for something different. Is he wrong?
Mark, I'm glad you showed that particular clip, and I thought that, you know, coming out the way he did last Thursday night, the way President Obama did on Thursday night in front of the House Democratic retreat down at Williamsburg, you know, interesting that companies are going broke, and they're not allowed to go to five-star resorts, but the country is definitely going broke, and Democrats are allowed to go to five-star resorts for their retreats. And I didn't hear President Obama criticizing them the way he criticized the companies for doing it. Anyway,
I didn't know it was a five-star retreat, but nobody should be in five-star retreats.
And
so you have that confession.
You know, so much for bipartisanship. He threw the gauntlet down. He's now in partisan campaign mode, and Republicans be darned. And that's okay. You don't need Republicans. We lost the election. Elections do have consequences. I wish you well. You will probably get to sink or swim on where the country is as a result of the economic package that will pass 2 years from now or 4 years from now. So we'll see where that is. But the Republicans are not going to be on it full bore, as you know. A couple of things about what he did say. You know, if you do the same thing over and over again, you know, the American people don't want that. I agree. What we did wrong, and Robert Reich makes, not a Democrat that I agree with very much at all, but what Robert Reich wrote a column about in the Washington Post, I think about 10 days ago, was about how this whole thing came around from just over-leveraging everything, borrow and spend, borrow and spend, not just the government, but people. It started off with the inflation in the Carter era, when inflation at points were in the area of 21-22% at times, mostly 12-14% through the Carter era. And so we had to have two spouses in the household working to maintain standard of living. And then after we established two-income households, Robert Reich argues that investments and housing started going up so we could borrow against our investments and borrow the equity against our houses. And we did that, and we borrowed so much equity against houses that eventually the bubble just burst and there was just nothing left to borrow. And when housing prices came down, that precipitated the entire crash. And he brought government in on this whole thing that, you know, government is borrow and spend as well. Well, the American people don't want borrow and spend. And this is exactly what President Obama is doing, is just more borrow and spend. Eventually the Chinese are going to get tired of financing all these deficits. What we need to have, what Bush and the Republicans did wrong, and I frequently admitted this in previous discussions with you, is they paid no attention to the deficit. It was their Achilles heel. It was the one thing they did incredibly wrong. Throughout the entire Bush administration, and Obama is tripling the bet or quadrupling the bet. Last point, Mark. You know, we are right now approaching $10 trillion committed to this thing, according to Bloomberg News. You know, we have the $700 billion TARP fund. We have the $1 trillion stimulus package. We have the $3 trillion that the Fed has shoved out the door as unspecified guarantees that we don't even know about. There's no transparency involved in it. They've committed another $5.7 billion in terms of support for these things, should it be needed. We're now up to $10 trillion. No one knows where it's going. There's no transparency. Mark, where does it stop? $10 trillion. Do you know how much hyperinflation we're going to have in about 3 years in this country? Inflation's going to be back in the Jimmy Carter range.
To me, hearing you complain about the national debt,
I didn't support it. I have to tell you, it
reminds me of this wino, and he's rip-roaring drunk, and he sees this woman, and she's having a little taste of wine, and he says, "You're tipsy for your party." I love the way you bring us back to Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan tripled Jimmy Carter's debt, and then Clinton brought us back to surplus, and then the first George Bush, and then even more so the second George Bush, brought us to the highest debt in national history. And so
after taking
$5 trillion, which, let's face it, all the Republicans defended. I can show you clips, if I can, I may show you some clips of where they defended spending trillions of dollars in Iraq, which, you know, you may not understand, but building a bridge in Iraq really doesn't help Americans here at home very much.
It does. It helps us with safety and security, but that's simply for nothing.
All that money and everything on Iraq, now that the Democrats have power to spend, it's, oh, no, stop now, no. Don't give health care, don't give unemployment insurance, don't help the electric grid so that we can have less reliance on foreign oil, don't have green jobs, and by all means, take away education. There's nothing Republicans hate more than the idea of educating people, because let's face it, when you educate people, they have an opportunity to succeed. It means that, God forbid, a poor person or a middle class person might actually have a chance to make it in America. We know you hate the American dream, and the three Republicans that had to come on board, well, you know, that was the first thing on the chopping block. They've got to cut education. Look,
Mark, as you know, I was a caustic critic of Bush's deficit spending for the entire time. I've been on your show.
Your party wasn't.
I've been
they
on
even
your
voted,
show.
They even voted for three to add $3 trillion to the deficit. 36 of the 41 Republican senators in Congress voted for the Republican alternative. And what was it? It was only tax cuts. $3 trillion in tax cuts. Four times either House or Senate program. More and more tax cuts to more and more rich people. Okay. And you know what happens when you give all these tax cuts to rich people? You have what happened in the Bush economy. You have a few people at the very top doing very, very well. In fact, you have greater income inequality than at any time since 1921. I'm going to play you a clip, actually, from Joe Biden, our vice president. Right. This is him on the campaign trail. And he's quoting the Wall Street Journal, not something that you'll often hear a Democrat quote. But he's quoting the Wall Street Journal about income inequality. And he points out that there has been no time since 1921 that you've had this kind of income inequality. You have the top 1%. I'm trying to pull up the clip here. If I have trouble, I'll just tell you what he said.
What are you looking for?
Let me say what he said. He said the top 1% earn 22% of all national wealth. And the bottom 50%, half of Americans combined, only earn 13%. So 1 in 100 Americans earns more than half as much as the bottom 50% put together. Let me just play him saying that real quick.
Governor, I love John talking about, well, you know, Barack Obama wants to redistribute income. Let me talk about redistribution, ladies and gentlemen. The fact of the matter is the biggest redistribution of wealth has taken place under George Bush. Wall Street Journal, not Joe Biden, points out, not since 1921 has this existed. Right now, the top 1% of the American people make over 22% of all the income in America. 1%. The bottom 50, they make less than 13%. Ladies and gentlemen, that's redistribution the wrong way. Let's set the record straight. Let's help the middle class.
So there has been redistribution of wealth, redistribution from the poor to the rich, and the tax cuts the Republicans want would redistribute the wealth more. How does robbing the poor to give to the rich, how does that stimulate our economy?
You know, I love Joe Biden. Every time he opens his mouth, we win votes. I just love this guy. I hope he just keeps talking and talking and talking. Mark, the government ought to guarantee equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. Equality of
when
outcome.
Cut education, the outcome, have equality of opportunity.
The outcome is up to us individually to go pursue our dreams and to put our effort to work and see where it comes.
Why cut education?
The government provides opportunity.
If you want opportunity, you have to have education. Well, and the thing, you know what, to get those three Republicans on board, they had to insist in cutting building new schools in half.
I don't want to go back to the Bush era because I don't think it's relevant, but let's keep in mind that the Department of Education budget unfortunately doubled under George Bush, okay? Doubled under George Bush.
Do you deny our schools are falling apart?
Yeah, I deny our schools.
You deny our schools are falling apart.
And furthermore, I don't see where it's the federal government's responsibility to build schools around the country.
You just said you build an equal opportunity. How do you have equal opportunity without education?
Mark, The building you're in has relatively little to do with the outcome of your education.
Really?
It's the
people in trailers out and they're crowded 50 in the classroom.
You know what?
That doesn't affect education.
We have trailers right here in very, very rich Northern Virginia where this show originates, and kids are getting fine educations in those trailers. What counts for a good education is an active, involved parent. A discipline-focused school, a principal that cares about the kids, and excellent teachers.
How about Pell Grants?
Those are the things.
College. Why would they cut Pell Grants? I mean, again, you say you believe in equal opportunity, but you take the chance in America to pursue the American dream that middle class and poor kids should have a chance to go to college, and you're wiping that out in order to give an alternative minimum tax cut?
Look, you have to make decisions. If we had $90 trillion to spend on the stimulus, we would, but apparently we're only going to spend $1 trillion on it. So you have to make decisions as to where that trillion is going to be spent. And sometimes you have to make the decision that in a day like this, you want to spend it on job creating and income producing things, not on other nice to have things. Pell Grants are a wonderful thing, Mark, but you can't spend $90 trillion. You've got to cut the thing someplace. Where are you going to cut it?
When we come back, I want to go over the differences between the House bill and the Senate bill. And these things that the three Republicans to sign on insisted on, I wonder what you think those are good ideas. And folks, if you want to give your two cents, just call 888-489. Back after this.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In today's Washington Post, on the front page, they quote Congressman Pete Sessions, Republican of Texas, who suggested last week that the party is learning from the disruptive tactics of the Taliban. The GOP is the party of no, and it's fascinating to me that Congressman Sessions would quote the Taliban as his model for Session. I don't think the American people support this, and Gallup agrees with me. There's a new Gallup poll out. This is a poll that was taken just 2 days ago, and it asked if you approve or disapprove of the way each of the following has handled the government's efforts to pass an economic stimulus bill. Let's show the graph on the screen if we can. President Barack Obama, 67% of Americans, two-thirds approve, 25%, one-quarter disapprove. Democrats in Congress, it's closer, but still a majority, or more approve than disapprove, 48% approve, 42% disapprove. And Republicans in Congress, 31%, less than a third approve, 58% disapprove. So I've got to say, I don't think your party of no strategy is working very well, Mark.
Well, Mark, I was actually surprised to see that poll because this is the first one on Gallup that I've seen, and it is totally out of whack with the daily tracking polls that Rasmussen has been doing on this for the last month. Rasmussen has 37% of the American people supporting the stimulus bill, 42% opposing the stimulus bill, and the rest all undecided about what's in it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Rasmussen's been polling on this almost nightly for the last 30 days. So I don't know where Gallup gets their numbers.
But here's the difference. The difference is Gallup was looking at whether people approve of Obama, the Democrats, or the Republicans. Rasmussen was looking at the stimulus, and many people, including myself, criticized the stimulus for not being enough. It's not big enough, and frankly, the three Republicans they needed to come on board in order to get past your filibuster, your party's filibuster, I think harmed the bill. Now, it's still better than nothing, but let's face it, first of all, if your party wanted, why not just have something that you used to love? I remember 4 years ago when you first came on this show, you used to love up and down votes. You even suggested a nuclear option. You didn't want to call it the nuclear option. You called it the constitutional option. In your view, the filibuster was unconstitutional, and everything should be done by majority vote. If we had a majority vote in the Senate, we wouldn't have to appeal to Arlen Specter and the two Republican moderates from Maine. We would just have an up or down vote. I take it you don't have that point of view anymore, Mike?
No, these are the rules of the Senate, Mark. Whatever the Democrats in control of the Senate want to make the rules of the Senate, it's their prerogative to do so.
And in your view, the Democrats could, against the Republicans' wishes, wipe away the 60-vote requirement.
They have the power to do it. It's up to them to make that decision. There's been a, it would be against the tradition of the Senate, against the customs and traditions of the Senate, but they have the power to do it. And if Harry Reid decides that that's what he wants to do, he's got it in his power to do so. All he's got to do is get his caucus to hang in there with him.
You know, somehow now, I think that your party would cry, holy hell.
Of course, if
the Democrats even considered doing something like that.
Of course we would. But Mark, let's get back to the three Republicans that you're talking about, what had to come out. You know, there were 20 people in that room. There were 15 Democrats and 5 Republicans. Over the course of time...
My understanding is there were 9 Republicans and... I mean, there were 9 Democrats and 8 Republicans. There were 17 people in the room.
No, there were only 5 Republicans. Over the course of time, Voinovich and Murkowski left, and that left Senator Snow, Senator Collins, and Senator Specter in the room. And I thought there were 15 Democrats. If you want to tell me there were 9 Democrats, whatever. Mark, this was a package that was put together by those 9 Democrats in the room.
Why
don't blame the 3 Republicans.
Why didn't the Republicans came in? The door was open. Any Republican could have walked in. Why did only 5 even attempt bipartisanship? Let me suggest to you that because they're following what Congressman Sessions called the Taliban tactics. They're following their true leader, who isn't Michael Steele. It's Rush Limbaugh. Rush, I hope he fails, Limbaugh. That's your true leader. And basically, you just decided that obstructing Obama, that's the new Republican mantra, right? No, no, no.
Well,
stop. Stop us from fixing the economy. We want a Great Depression because that makes Obama look bad.
Let's get the players right, okay? In the House, the leader is a gentleman from Ohio named John Boehner. And in the Senate, the leader is a senator from Kentucky by the name of Mitch McConnell. Those are the people who are leading the Republicans. Mark, look. Republicans want a stimulus package. What they don't want is an uncontrolled spending package. If you got this thing down to about $600 billion, and if you got it in the economic format that it passed the test of all being spent in the first 18 months, and let's get, you know, jobs created, you'd have a majority of the Republican caucus supporting this. But you don't. You're at $900 billion.
I haven't seen that.
And it's going to be, by the time... You saw the Republican substitute.
No, you know what the Republican substitute was? It was $3 trillion in tax cuts over 10 years. That was it.
That's an excellent plan.
That was the entire stuff.
That's an excellent plan.
Let me talk about what your...
Jack Kennedy would have supported $3 trillion in tax cuts over 10 years.
Let me talk about what your three Republicans insisted, because their changes were,
there were 9 Democrats. I thought there were 15. I'm willing to go with you. 9 Democrats in this room. Don't tell me it was 3 Republicans.
It had to be.
This was an agreement
because
that the Democrats in the room...
Because your party was filibustering. They needed 61. They only have 58 because you keep Al Franken out. We'll talk about that, too, if there's time at the end. So they needed at least 2 more votes, and they had to do what they had to do. And let me suggest to you that Barack Obama did make a mistake. His mistake was in reaching out to the Republicans, thinking that they would act in a bipartisan manner in a way to help America. He should have known from the beginning that they would be the party of no.
Why would
Congressman Session talks about Taliban?
Why would Republicans accept at face value his comments about bipartisanship when he gave a speech like he did last Thursday night? It was as partisan and as rancorous as it can possibly get.
It was the speech of a president scorned.
It was...
Barack Obama went to the Republicans with 1/3 in tax cuts. He didn't have to offer that high. He had 1/3 already in tax cuts in the package, 2/3 spending, even though every economics textbook will tell you that government spending stimulates the economy more than tax cuts.
No, only Keynesian textbooks, and you don't have Keynesian textbooks around anymore. They're gone.
They're all over the place. Every basic economics textbook, you know, they're all written...
You know what? I said that though. We had Samuelson, right?
They're all there. And there's a reason for that. It actually makes sense. The reason is that if you have government spending, every dollar goes into the economy and then it's multiplied by the multiplier effect. Mm-hmm. If you have a tax cut, a certain percentage of it is saved. And frankly, for the multimillionaires, they save a lot of it because they just don't have anything to spend on. So you give a tax cut to the rich, it's the weakest form of stimulus available. And Obama knows that, and therefore, but he still gave the Republicans 1/3 because he wanted a broad bipartisan package with 80, 90 votes. When the Republicans gave him nada, and then they made him bargain against himself, and they had to increase the tax cuts from 1/3 to 42%. Basically, Obama's not going to get... At the beginning, he gave them pretty much everything they should want. He gave them 1/3 of the package, and that wasn't enough for them. Why should he compromise anymore?
Look, we all know, even the Washington Post has written what the problem with the stimulus package is. It was the president displayed no leadership. He allowed Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid to write this bill on the Hill rather than writing it in the White House and giving it to them and saying, these are my minimally acceptable things. Now you work around my mark rather than working around Chairman Pelosi or Speaker Pelosi's mark.
They worked together.
You know, Pelosi took the president for a ride. She embarrassed him. Harry Reid has taken the president for a ride. Bernie Frank was on television yesterday talking about how he's telling the president the way it's going to be, and the president better see it. Bernie Frank.
President in Congress works together to make a
It's not working. The president
What Obama said was the last thing.
I'm disappointed that you think his skin is so thin that he took it personally when he didn't get
Republican votes, and he had to go out and give a rant speech like that.
Look, it belittles the office of the presidency to make a speech like that.
Mike, there's two ways to negotiate, and I'm sure you know them well. If you believe in good faith on the part of your opponent, you know, I worked as a trial lawyer. If you believe that someone's acting in good faith, you give them pretty much what they want. You bargain a little around the edges. You come together for an agreement. But you might call it, whether it's a no-fault divorce or it's businessmen shaking hands on a contract. When you have good faith, you basically figure out where you think the end deal is. You propose it, and you stick to it. When you have someone who's working in bad faith, well, that's when you need to sort of start way below what you really want, and then they want way more, and then you compromise in the middle. Obama started with the bipartisan proposal because he assumed good faith on behalf of Republicans. That was a mistake. He should never have assumed Republican good faith. They're being run by Rush Limbaugh, the party of no, and now he won't make that mistake in the future.
President Obama did not start with anything. Nancy Pelosi wrote the bill. Nancy Pelosi told the Republicans it was a take it or leave it. They left it, and the president was somehow insulted and put out that the Republicans did not jump on Nancy Pelosi's bill. The politics are there. They're clear.
Well, I'll tell you something. Your party doesn't seem to mind a lot of spending when it's on their priorities.
No, we do.
I want to show you.
No, John Boehner. I'm going to tell you.
This is John Boehner.
It was a huge mistake, and we repudiate the mistakes of the spending.
Let's listen to him on that.
It's a price for freedom. And how do you put a price on freedom and security in our country?
Yeah. So that's good point. That's John Boehner. That's a good question. Let me show you Daryl Issa.
Generation begs the real question of not is it nice to spend, but is it our right and money to spend by borrowing it from the American people?
Daryl Issa can't let our children spend $2 billion to create road repair jobs in our national parks. So you can imagine how angry he must have been in 2007 when it was revealed that $12 billion of taxpayer money had just disappeared with no accountability in Iraq.
I might also, for the committee, put into perspective what $12 billion is. Certainly seems like a lot of money when you put it in $100 bills and put it on forklifts and put it into C-130s.
Go on.
I think they'll more accurately look that less than $1,000 per man, woman, and child in that region would certainly be considered to be a measured amount to be spent.
Yes, but I'm not sure they think it's a measured amount to have just disappeared. But let's hear the moral objections of Senator Chuck Grassley, who once requested $50 million for an indoor rainforest in his home state of Iowa.
Right.
The people back home see Congress spending vast amounts of taxpayers' money. They're counting on us to stimulate their money, or ensure their money is spent wisely, not wastefully, and that means to make sure that this is a stimulus bill and not a populist bill.
So you have basically Republicans who don't mind spending through the roof on Iraq. Even if we lose $12 billion, so it's just $12 billion, we lost it. It happens all the time. Chuck Grassley, who spent $50 million on a rainforest in Iowa, now suddenly, health care and education and the electric grid and green jobs and all the things in this bill are suddenly pork. The main thing that the so-called moderate Republicans wanted to cut was aid to states. They cut it in half. This at a time when you even have Republican governors, people like Governor Christ of Florida, Governor Schwarzenegger of California, are saying, we desperately need the money. Our states are in trouble. We're going to have to lay off firefighters and police officers and teachers. And Republicans are saying, no money for education, cut shouldn't have the stuff for states. Instead, we want the alternative minimum tax cut, a tax cut that only helps people that make hundreds of thousands of dollars, people who will basically take the money and put it in the bank and not spend it. It's the same old, isn't it?
Well, Mark, first of all, you know, of course, every governor wants the stimulus to come, with the noticeable courageous exception of Mark Sanford of South Carolina. They want it because it's free money to them. You know, when are the states going to learn to spend, you know, to stand on their own?
Why are the states not in fiscal trouble right now? Are they not in unique fiscal trouble because of the economic pressure?
Why don't they figure out where to cut their budgets? Why are they going to Washington with their hand out and saying, oh, please, mister, give me a dime. Please, mister, give me a dime.
That's what a stimulus package is for. You're at the bottom of the business cycle. I want to stimulate the economy.
I want to stimulate the economy, not state governments. I do not want to stimulate state governments.
You just want more people out of a job, so you can blame Obama for the economic crisis that's coming around.
Why should I, as a taxpayer in Virginia, send money to Washington to bail Arnold Schwarzenegger out of his problems in California?
I don't understand why
I would do that.
The money would come to Virginia as well. When we come back, I want to play from your favorite news source, Fox News, how it's already out of the tax bill. You want to call in the posting number 888-488-MARSH? We'll be right back.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. When a new president takes office, there's traditionally what they call a honeymoon period where people respect what the electorate voted for and give the new president a chance to succeed. Well, not the Republican Party. They are determined to make Obama fail. Their leader, Rush Limbaugh, certainly has said so. We'll go into what he said in just a minute. But first, I want to go into the news source for Republicans, run by former Republican operative Roger Ailes, of course, Fox News. This is a concatenation of clips from...
A
concatenation of clips from Fox News. This is from January 21st. This is literally Obama's first full day in office, the day after inauguration.
Go ahead.
Let me play for you. This is a whole day of Fox News.
Mr. Big Word, go ahead.
If Barack Obama gets his way, they could apparently be coming to our soil right here domestically.
Right now you're in danger. Your family's in danger.
A murdered American soldier, a foreign leader wanted by the U.S., Obama's pick for White House counsel. How are they all tied together? And he has the shocking connection.
Holder is affirmatively dangerous to this country's security.
We cannot trust Timothy Geithner.
Barack Obama does not have his hand on the Bible.
Is he really president?
I still don't know what the man is
going to
do.
He's not going to succeed. Socialism has failed.
I find it highly entertaining, Wendell, that only 24 hours in or less that we're already talking about stuff.
You know, I find it highly entertaining, too, that only 24 hours in, Fox is already talking about Obama is a danger, Eric Holder is a danger, we cannot trust him, socialism, and he didn't put his hand on the Bible, is he really president? I mean, they're out to get him literally from day one.
Mark, I'm going to say one thing that you'll hate and one thing that you'll probably love. And the thing that you'll hate is, look, everybody that you had on those clips, yes, they were on Fox News, but none of them were news reporters. Every single one of them was a political commentator. And so you have a concopany, or whatever it was, of the conservative political commentators that are there grinding their thing. If you want to listen to MSNBC, you'll hear the exact same thing against the Republicans from day one, blah, blah, blah. This is what political commentators do. The second thing that you'll probably like is, yeah, you know what? Fox News did used to be fair and balanced, and they were fair and balanced for a long time. I think that
they're... Really? When was that?
I
don't remember. Can you give me a date?
I think that they're starting to tilt in the last month or so, a little bit further away from fair and balanced than they have been. And I would think they would serve themselves and their audience better by going back to the way they were last year rather than the way they started off a month ago.
Well, Mike, that's a tiny admission, but I'll take it. It's more than I expected from you, so...
I pause them as I see them.
I don't think they've been fair and balanced ever, but they are always fair and balanced.
They just didn't. They're moving too far now.
Okay.
They need to get back to the center.
I'm glad to hear you say that. You know, what's interesting is that Republicans seem to really, really like Rush Limbaugh. He seems to be sort of the leader of your party right now.
I would argue that.
Well, let me play for you what some Republicans say about Rush Limbaugh. because they seem to really like the guy a lot. Here is members of your party talking about Rush Limbaugh.
Are you going to play what Rush says about Rush?
I will in a second. But first, let's play what your party has to say about him.
He is a passionate, articulate, conservative voice.
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh has an incredible amount of power. He really is a force to reckon with.
Rush Limbaugh is a conservative voice in this country that clearly people must pay attention to.
Rush Limbaugh is a voice of a significant portion of our conservative movement in America.
Rush Limbaugh, who I admire, and like millions of Americans, I cherish his voice.
Okay, so clearly this is a guy that's very well loved in your party and very much respected, including by your new chairman, Michael Steele. This is what this guy, well loved by Republicans, famously said. Just recently on his radio show.
We are being told that we have to hope he succeeds, that we have to bend over, grab the ankles, bend over forward, backward, whichever, because his father was black, because this is the first black president. Many Republicans say that very thing. Well, we want him to succeed. Prominent Republican. Yes, we want to. They have laid down. They have totally. They're drinking the Kool-Aid too. So I shamelessly say no. I want him to fail.
So here we have
this hate stuff. This
we have obviously a lot of support for Rush Limbaugh in your party and among the conservative commentariat. And Rush Limbaugh says two things, both of which I would think most Americans would find offensive. The first is that we have to love Barack Obama because he's black. Which certainly is not true, and I think it's offensive to say so. And the second thing he said is, you know, I hope he fails. Interestingly, before you comment, I do want to show you one more clip, and this is of Bill O'Reilly talking in March 07 about those that said they hoped Bush fails. Let me just play this for you real quick.
Rooting for the administration to fail in Iraq and another...
Let's do it again.
This hate stuff, this rooting for the administration to fail in Iraq and in other areas, is un-American, unbecoming, and unacceptable. Like it or not, President Bush is the elected leader of this country.
Okay, so O'Reilly was saying a year ago, like it or not, President Bush is the elected leader. Rooting for him to fail is unacceptable and un-American, and yet Rush Limbaugh is doing exactly that. Who's right?
Well, first, let me say it surprises and shocks me that Jon Stewart would stoop to the level of taking things out of context and running them things like that.
How is it out of context?
But when you've got a quote, you know, let's go ahead and put the whole quote in there and not just cut it off after what could be on its own the most inflammatory part. I mean, we all know Jon Stewart and Colbert are extensions of the Democratic National Committee. Apparently, they have no shame in terms of kinds of things that they will stoop to. That particular quote about we have to support him because he's the first African American president went on to say that, you know, this is the liberal news media, this is the news media cheering this. No, we don't have to do what the drive-by media tells us to do. We can look at this and analyze it on our own and go forward and make our own decisions. And for Stewart to take that out of context like that is really despicable, and it creates an image that doesn't exist.
No, how is it out of context? What is it that he says right here? Here's the full quote. I can read it to you. It's not out of context at all. He's talking about responding to a guy that wants to know, that said, what, hope for the Obama presidency. This is a direct quote from Limbaugh. So I'm thinking of replying to the guy, okay, I'll send you a response, but I don't need 400 words. I need four. I hope he fails. Mm-hmm. What are you laughing at? See, here's the point. Everybody thinks it's outrageous to say, look, even my staff, oh, you can't do that. Why not? Why is it any different? What's new? What is unfair about my saying, I hope liberalism fails? Liberalism is our problem. Liberalism is what's gotten us dangerously close to the precipice here. Why do I want more of it? I don't care what the drive-by story is. I would be honored if the drive-by media headlined me all day long, Limbaugh, I hope Obama fails. Somebody's got to say it. That is the full unedited quote.
That's the other quote. That's not the one I was talking about before, which was that we need to support him because he's the black, the first African-American president. This is a different one. And yes, I think that quote is self-explanatory, and I think Rush and anybody else can stand by that.
Do you stand by that?
Oh, you know what?
Do you hope he fails?
I don't think his socialist leading tendencies on the economy are going to succeed, and I don't want them to succeed because I don't want to live in an economy where the government controls what's going on. I want to live in an economy where it's capitalistic and it's the private culture that does
now,
that.
Now, wait just a minute.
If the wholesale takeover of the economy is what Obama wants to do and that succeeds, then yes, I hope he fails at that, and I think that's what Rush Limbaugh was saying.
Now wait, your president and your presidential candidate, both mm-hmm. John McCain and George Bush, supported a huge socialist bailout of Wall Street.
Right.
They want huge amounts of money, billions, hundreds of billions
right.
of dollars going to Wall Street. They just don't want
right.
it to go to ordinary Americans
no,
who are out of
it's
a job.
A big mistake.
Why
big
is
mistake.
One socialist and the other one isn't?
A big mistake. The one to bail out Wall Street was socialist. It should not have happened. Even I at the time supported it, Mark, because we didn't have
You're
enough.
You're changing your mind?
Yeah, we didn't have enough information. We were told things are bad. The world's going to hell in a basket. You know, blah, blah, blah. If we don't have this thing passed within 3 days, you know, we're looking at Armageddon. Everybody jumped on the team, bipartisan, okay, boom. You know what? We spent $350 billion of that TARP money. It didn't accomplish a darn thing. Nobody knows where the money went. There's no accountability in the whole thing.
Because yes. your if, president, if, George Bush, didn't give us any accountability.
If I was a member of Congress back then, I would have voted for it. And if I was a member of Congress today, I would be jumping through hoops trying to explain how I had made a mistake and would never do that again.
So, okay, so you're changing your mind on
yeah,
it. It's very
I
interesting.
I think the TARP was a mistake.
I've got to say, because
there's nothing in return for our $700 billion. We have nothing in return for it.
The first 350, we have nothing in return because Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary at the time, didn't do what he said he was going to do. What he said he was going to do was monitor it, make sure he knew where every dollar went. He simply didn't do that. Obama's second half, $350 billion, has not yet been spent. But Obama, you will see, he will be accountable for every dime in a way that George Bush
does
not.
And we were supposed to hear from the Treasury Secretary Geithner today as to how the last half of the TARP would be used. And lo and behold, they canceled the whole thing.
Well, they canceled it because your party's busy filibustering the stimulus package. We got to work that
through. Oh, I think,
let me ask
Secretary Geithner could have held his press conference.
We only have a few seconds left. One of the things that was in the first stimulus package was a restriction on executive compensation that some Republican basically crossed out. They thought it was in there, but then they took it out on a technicality. Obama has reinstated and said that if you get TARP money, you shouldn't make more than $500,000 a year. I agree. I think it should be even less. What's your thought?
President's dead wrong. If you're going to take money like that, you're essentially becoming a government employee. You ought to be subject to the GS schedule. Top salary is $173,000.
On that, we agree, Mike. It's nice to end on a note of agreement. We both agree executives are making far too much government
they're
money.
They're not making far too much. They should not. There needs to be an incentive to get off that government money.
Thanks for getting